Welcome to Red Ice Creations Radio. Thank you for tuning in. This is Henrik Palmgren, and we are coming to you from Sweden's west coast. Our website is redicecreations.com. Check it out. There you'll find our radio archive and subscriber section. We also have a news section that is updated frequently. Links and resources to important and interesting research material. Today we have our regular guest Michael Tesarion back with us on the program, and we have an important subject lined up. Our theme is the post-human world. This is about transhumanism, AI, artificial intelligence, the cyborg, genomics, and the new man. Before we dive into it, I want to mention a few of Michael's website that you need to take a look at right away in case you're new to Michael's work. The main site is michaeltesarion.com. And from there you'll find links to taroscopes.com and also originsandoracles.com. Much more material for you to dive further into. To set the theme for our program, I want to read a quote from Genetic Armageddon by Steve Quayle. A terrifying future thunders towards mankind, an impending fate embodied by monstrous, blasphemous combinations of human and animal genetic materials, of man-machine cyborgs, and of beings not only with increased capacities and extended lifespans, but also with re-engineered morality void of compassion. This future is so abhorrent as to almost defy the imagination. These new beings and the transhumanists looking forward to their arrival will not be benevolent, just the opposite, because the goal of those creating these beings is to have them replace human beings, that the new race will be post-humans. The word post-human sounds innocuous enough until one realizes that post means after. And Michael, a lot of people studying the 2012 phenomena believe that the world will come to an end. And you say that history will come to an end, so there must be a difference. Also, you say in your DVD and in the 2012 The Future of Mankind webstream that we are on a countdown to a post-human world in which man as we know him ceases to exist. That is, we may not be heading for a utopia, more a technotopia. And you've also spoken in your work of the Nephilim who visited Earth and made man in their image. You say that man may be an embryonic vampire or alien-to-be. Are we in an incubation stage being looked over by our masters on high, those who created the culture we grow in? Are the symptoms of evil and decay that we see all around us created by man there because man is in fact a cyborg or vampire in the making? In that case, the bizarre things taking place in the world would make perfect sense.
Well, thanks, Henrik, for having me back on. And, you know, what you're talking about there is basically my own personal, you know, beliefs. You know, I've got... I mean, you're hitting on a fine line there because I've got information that, you know, I think that the public need to know, which is, of course, you know, what I do professionally and put out a message based on research and study. And then I've got my own, you know, ruminations, you know. And I don't really want to trouble the human race with my own thoughts and theories, but that particular one, you know, is something that is close to my heart. And I think that a lot of people who've sat and really looked out the window and or watched TV, you know, or examined the teen and anyone like myself, you know, maybe who's come from a troubled spot of the world. There's a lot of violence and inhumanity of indescribable proportions, you know. At some point, you're going to wonder, what is all of this cruelty and sadism and just this, you know, and I have seen extreme versions of it. But I would say that even if you haven't seen extreme versions, you can certainly see what's happening in today's world. Mm. Genocide, you know, and war, and mass murder taking place. You know, it's almost like the earth is not a pleasant place to be on for a lot of people. Mm. And when you see all of this, and you look very deeply into the causes, and you study psychology and sociology and these things, you know, it's not, I know it sounds very science fiction to a lot of people, and the science fiction has certainly even dealt expressly with this theme, but I tend to think, you know, could it be that, you know, we are in fact not heading for, you know, a perfect anthropos, you know, we're not heading towards the utopia. Even if you take on board, you know, the idea of evolution, what are we evolving into exactly? And everyone goes, oh, man has got these, you know, problems. He's a divided being. You know, he's got his reason on one side. He's got his emotions on the other. We're working it out. Religion will help. You know, science can come up with a cure. You know, we put a lot of our faith into a lot of these things. But, you know, again, I would tend to look at it and say, well, let's look at it from another point of view here. If our DNA really was tampered with in ages past, and if we are, in fact, already part alien, and we might even find that human emotions are troublesome and cause more trouble than they're worth. I mean, don't we live in a culture like that where people are sucking, you know, all forms of pharmaceuticals into them, dying to block out the pain, block out the suffering? You know, we're living in a situation in which people are becoming more and more dehumanized. So perhaps what's happening in 2012, see, I've never believed that the world is going to end. Mm-hmm. I do say history is going to end, and you're right, there is a difference. But could it be then that the world we know it is going to end, the human world, the world we've accepted? I mean, it is ending. It's ending right now. Most of the older generation don't even know what's happening around them. They see so much change already, and that's not just to be flippantly, you know, cast off. Well, they're the old folks, of course, they're going to think like that. No, because, you know, people who've even grown up in the 80s can't even recognize this world. I mean, things are seem to be, you know, changing at a very rapid pace. So I have, you know, toyed with the idea that, look, if these aliens came here, tampered with our DNA, we are their creatures, perhaps we are in a sort of a kindergarten level of what they are. You know, a lot of people email me and a lot of questions have been asked, hey, look, if we're run by these Nephilim guys, why don't they wipe us out? Well, maybe one of the reasons why they haven't wiped us out is because we are their children. They literally think of us in a very condescending way, perhaps, as sort of their unruly. You know, remember the Freemasons have the red and blue degrees where you're sort of like the green guy who just comes in, he's green. Well, they call you red, you see, like you're just a beginner. You're out of control. You haven't controlled your emotions.
The rough ashlar, or?
Yes, the rough, unkempt, unhewn rock. What happens if these imperious, very detached, highly controlled masters, these people who are descendants, look down upon us and go, well, 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 you're just the naughty children. Look at all of you in wars. You know, soon we'll have an Orwellian, you know, one world order, and we'll get you calmed down, and there won't be any war anymore. And we'll even take care of all of those troublesome emotions. But my goodness, look at you guys. You know, we turn our backs for 5 minutes, and geez, you're just all over the place. And you even believe in God and all these weird things, you know, and you talk about spirit and brotherhood of man. Oh, you're so quaint. But one day you'll grow out of all of that because, I mean, these are just troublesome ideas. They keep you awake at night. Don't you realize we're the Nephilim, you know, and, we, you know, pat you on the back and you'll go to our schools and, you know, slowly, slowly you'll evolve. It's just a matter of time because we want to make you into who we are. You know, what would happen? Wouldn't that explain what's happening in the world? Wouldn't that explain why man is so dehumanized and why he almost craves? You know, see, to me, look, it's incomprehensible that we've had the movies that we've had. We've had the philosophers that we've had. We've had the thinkers that we've had. We've had the rock bands that we've had, and that we're still in this much mess. We have had teachers of the greatest dimension. I mean, you can't imagine greater than Tolkien. You can't imagine greater than C.S. Lewis, you know, and I'm talking about my mentors here, right? I mean, but, you know, what about The Who, you know, and their music, or, you know, or their movies? What about, you know, the bands, Pink Floyd and the Moody Blues? I mean, are we talking the same language here? I mean, people have listened and grown up with these people's music and watched these films, and they still haven't got a faintest idea what's going on. They still can vote for the corporatization of the world and for war and vote in these tyrants. To me, you see, that needs to be explained. And it can easily be explained if you toy with the idea that it's because man is not heading towards Godhead. He's not heading towards enlightenment. He's not heading towards brotherhood of man. He never was meant to end up that way. That's all a fiction. That's all just to keep him warm at night as the sort of in his kindergarten level, you know. He's gone off down all of these vague tangents, talking about religion and God and brotherhood of man and peace on earth and all of this kind of thing. You know, Bacon and Bertrand Russell, you know, and the Huxleys, they weren't concerned about any of this. And certainly neither was Adolf Hitler and, you know, a lot of the people we're going to talk about on this show. But the idea is, you see, that it would explain it much more if man, with his alien genes, was being cultivated to grow into something that is literally the Frankensteinian, you know, Orwellian fulfillment that these guys are dreaming about, that we see a lot in science fiction movies, but because it's presented to us in a right brain, we kind of laugh it off.
Yeah.
You know, and even a lot of the kids' cartoons and a lot of the anime has gone into this. And I'm fascinated by those shows. I'm wondering, what are they showing us here?
What's the message there?
Yeah. Judge Dredd, you know, the list is endless. Running Man, I mean, you know, we could get into all the movies. We'd be here for the next, you know, 10 hours.
That's right.
Because this has been covered. This is not a bizarre thing. Most people listening to the show will recognize what we're talking about. But it's presented to you, not on the daily news. It's presented to you in more of a right brain way through the movies, and so for you, somehow it's not connecting. They've even shown in movies like Underworld and other films that there's our races of vampires that become super technological and they live off human blood. You know, Blake Seven and other shows that I've grown up with often have gone into this. So it's a staple of science fiction. Now, what would happen? We know that the leaders controlling the world are not human people. We know that these are not moral or good people. So what happens if they, being our caretakers, they being our parents, are slowly, they have a love-hate relationship towards us. You know, we are their children, so they don't really necessarily wipe out the entire human race, because they know that bad as we are and lost as we are going to one day be, you know, we're made in their image. And this frightens me, because this is, to me, I see mankind definitely, again, I'm saying, like I said, at the, you know, in the beginning, that this is personally my own idea. I don't want anybody to, you know, necessarily take this, you know, as gospel or anything like that. But I tend to think that there could be something to this. And I've, you know, studied Malthus and Hobbes all my life. You know, I've studied the philosophers of John Stuart Mill and Jeremy Bentham and the Fabian Society. You know, I love reading these guys, and these philosophies are very interesting to me. But when I take it all together with the way things are moving and with New World Order philosophy, I can't help thinking, you see, that this is what man is turning into. If I ever needed any proof, I just need to step out into the street. I don't like what human beings are becoming. I don't like the way that the youth, who are cruel, sadistic, lost, jaded, cut off, dehumanized, desensitized, sense-infatuated, you see, I don't like what I see. And I'm not going to just, you know, dismiss it and say, oh, you know, that's just a phase. We are in some very, very troubled times. And the human traits, what are considered the human traits, the mores, the morals, whatever you want to call it, the virtues, are passing like, you know, snowflakes melting in a volcano. You know, it's just passing away before our eyes. And so my concern, therefore, is not that the world will end or that nature will end, but that the man, as we know him today and have known him in the past, this entity, this creature is going to, you know, terminate at some point, to be replaced by something much more sinister and much more unreal.
So is this about taking away the spirit in man, the essence of you know, where we think at least where our morality lies and all of this? Is that where
this
is going?
Yeah, it's the ending of virtue. It's the ending of man's... see, what is it that makes a man a man? What is it that makes human beings human? There's only two things. One is that he is free to choose to be rational or not. Right? So when people say, hey, a man's born free, right? Man's free. Yes, he's free, but that's only half the sentence. He's free to do something. That is, he's free to either use his intelligence or not to use it. That's what he's free to do. And most men that you look at today are choosing not to think. More importantly, a lot of men that you see in this today's world, the human race, is choosing not to feel.
That's right.
If you want to split hairs about it.
Yeah,
But here's the problem with that. That which makes you truly human, if you decide not to do it anymore, for whatever reason, I mean, there's all sorts of reasons why a human being might choose to murder themselves, as we've spoken about in previous shows, or not feel, or not have emotion, or throw emotion away, or even not be conscious, or not rational. Every person has a reason for doing that. But just in general, let's just say that if you do choose to not face yourself, or because you're so self-sadistic, you've literally murdered your own emotions or whatever terminology you want to use, you've done it because you want to avoid pain. Psychologists know this. It's a common problem. We have darker emotions. We have things that cause us great emotional distress. So we stop being introverted. We don't look at ourselves. We don't face ourselves, and we block it, either by constantly working, you see, or running in the world, or taking pharmaceutical drugs or whatever. The 101 ways we avoid ourselves. We've talked about this in previous shows.
Yeah.
We call it the inauthentic life. However, there's a problem. The person who prevents themselves feeling pain, he also desensitizes himself to feeling pleasure too.
That's right. That's
because
right.
you can't split it, you know. Yeah. If you cut yourself off, if you dumb down your feeling, hey, I don't want to feel any pain. Unfortunately, with that comes a slow desensitization to pleasure also. Now, of course, that affects your relationships. It affects your life. You don't smell the roses anymore. You don't see the sunset anymore. Mm. You're not open to the finer human feelings towards animals and, you know, nature and to human beings.
Mm.
So what we're seeing now is a generation, a youth generation, and generally a middle class, it's basically a pandemic in the world, is that man, in order to run away from those emotions that he thinks are painful, meaning his shadow self, his dark side of himself, has actually made a mistake and closed himself off to feeling entirely.
Mm, yeah.
So he's wrapped in cellophane. And if you're not feeling pleasure and pain, in fact, if you're not feeling at all and you become so desensitized, haven't you then ceased to be a human being?
Yeah.
Because that's what makes a human being tick, is that he can feel, he can think. If you stop doing that because you were trying to save yourself pain, you now become so desensitized that you've stopped working on the human level altogether.
Mm.
And now the only things that turn you on have to be extreme versions of sensual fulfillment, meaning that the stimuli that needs to come in now needs to be so gratuitous, you see.
Intensified.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. Mm. And aren't we seeing that exact symptom?
That's right, yeah.
Jaded face. You just need to walk past people in the mall and you just, oh my God, it's worse than the night of the living dead. Soulless, empty, sense-infatuated, utterly, you know, dispossessed, soulless people. And it's because they've run away from what Jung called the darker emotions.
Mm, yeah.
What did Jung say? Man will do anything, no matter how absurd, to avoid facing his own soul.
Sure, that's right.
And then in my web stream, I amended the quote to say, man will do anything, no matter how absurd, to stop facing his shadow self.
Mm.
Because it's avoidance of legitimate suffering that has caused all of this.
Yeah.
So tomorrow, if we do end up in this technotronic world, you see, it will not be because, as you say, somebody has come to take your soul. It's because you've given up your soul.
Mm.
You yourself have offered it on a plate to anyone who'll buy it.
Mm.
You can't blame, the Nephilim or the Illuminati for buying what you sold them.
That's right. That's
if you've handed up your spirit, go ahead, Doc, life's too painful, it's a bummer, I don't like that, or, she broke my heart, or he broke my heart, or life's a bitch, I don't like the work. And for whatever reason, you're not dealing with your inauthenticity, you haven't taken responsibility for your life, you're not moving from a passion, then don't blame those who pick up the garbage later on.
Mm.
If you have trashed your soul, how can you blame, it's like that Star Wars, the little guys who run around picking up all the trash, those little cyborgs. How can you blame them from going and, selling you on the black market if you're pieces of junk, scrap metal?
Sure, that's right.
When you abdicate right rulership of yourself, when you cannot take responsibility, when you do not own your so-called shadow side, when you do not know how to manage, your own life and take the good and the bad together, then you will breed these Orwellian, dictators who are now well and truly in power. You call them neocons or whatever we want. But this is an old story going back to the Roman Empire of beyond.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly is a story of the Industrial Revolution, you see.
Hey, I just want to interject there because you mentioned the neocons, and isn't it interesting that if you actually go into Wikipedia and type in the Vulcans, actually get the Bush administration, basically, the Condoleezza Rice and a few others that actually refer to themselves as the Vulcans. And again, this is, of course, about controlling or almost removing to some degree the emotional,
Absolutely. This is a perfect example of what is the Vulcans, a super advanced technotronic race who literally turned off the emotion switch.
Mm.
They sat down, they methodically and philosophically worked it out that emotions are troublesome.
Mm.
And they turned off that, dial. I believe this is what these Nephilim controllers of the world had done on their own planet. I believe that that's what they did. They had good reasons for doing it. They really worked this out mathematically. They sat down and they all decided. And so now they're down here with us, the red men. We're running around sort of their children, unruly kids who haven't quite got it yet. But with their assistance, with their midwifing, we'll get it.
Mm.
And they reward those, who become more scientific, more left brain, colder. These are the people in our society who are rewarded in fact, instantly. As soon as you operate from that, my goodness, you're a general overnight. You'll be the head of a corporation. So the other guy sits there and wonder, why all the evil, why are these guys why does the world operate like this? How come they have no humanity? Mm. Well, maybe because we are not only being run by people, we're not only being guided and, you know, ruled by soulless, anti-human, inorganic souls who've lost all of their sense of, you know, feeling, who are extremely necrotic, but maybe the highest agenda is that we are meant to follow suit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, my message is, look, that might sound really obnoxious to most people and absolutely horrible, but is it? If your neighbor and people in your family and people you work with have become so like ghost-like in their own shell,
mm-hmm.
if they've become so disembodied within their own being, so ungrounded, if they have become so estranged from their own souls, if they're living in persona world, are you going to then tell me that they don't need the handrails, you see, that is mm-hmm. provided
mm-hmm.
by that Leviathan?
Mm-hmm.
I guarantee you they're going to. I'm telling you that it's happening now.
Mm.
The record levels of drugs, you see, that are being taken, both illegal and legal.
That's right. That's right.
So we may not ever see utopia. I have no doubts about it.
Yeah.
That we're not heading for any utopia. The Piscean age is closing. But I don't see anybody doing any spiritual homework that should end up, you know, I think we should divest ourselves of a lot of these illusions.
Mm.
I'm not a doom prophet, but I also do believe we have to see reality.
That's right. Yeah,
not our faked idea of the reality or some new age claptrap. We have to face the fact that people are not doing their inner homework. They're running headlong from the authentic life, you know, through the primal guilt and things we've talked about in other shows.
Yeah. And this ties, again, we could tie this right back to Huxley again, of course, about introducing the soma or whatever, removing the suffering in order to go towards this, I guess what he or they will refer to as an utopia. But I mean, Adam Curtis has made documentaries about this. There is a political philosophy that sees the emotions in man as the enemy, and that we have to remove that in order to, you know, obtain the order, you know, out of this chaos that we have here. You know?
That's right. We must never forget that there has been external individuals who've kept this as a big philosophy for many, many centuries, for generations. You know, and that anyone who knows about the Tavistock Institute of Human Relations in London or the Frankfurt School in Germany, or in an American context, you want to be talking about the Trilateral Commission and Council on Foreign Relations and many other think tanks like RAND and the Brookings Institute and all sorts of MIT, CIT, SRI.
Stanford Research Institute.
These people are hell-bent on this. They want to make manifest the philosophies of some very interesting men who also believe this, that man is kept down by his emotions. He's awfully troubled by these emotions. These emotions also... they make him an imperfect work unit.
Mm-hmm.
You see all those troublesome emotions. And, of course, you also start, through your emotional feeling centers, you might start questioning reality. They also don't want that.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
So they want to, you know, teach you to use your left brain to cut off your emotions. Children are taught from day one.
Mm.
If a child shows any legitimately true emotion, the parent usually instantly stifles it.
Mm.
If a child, you know, comes in all exuberant and happy and screaming and yelling about something, the parent almost inevitably thinks, what's wrong with you? Why can't you be quiet? See, we don't even notice it. It's done so often.
Yeah, that's right.
If a child is gloomy or down or, I hate you, I hate you, I hate him, look what he did.
Mm.
We'll say, oh, you don't really feel like that. Don't you say that. You don't really hate your brother. You don't really hate that person or your friend, you know. Well, wait a minute. That, you know, that's a form of censorship.
Sure.
Why don't you go with the emotion and find out and lead that through? And, you know, I mean, we're not going to get into the whole upbringing of children in this show, but, you know, don't get me started. But what I'm trying to say is that there is this repressive, constant teaching of the child, doubt your emotions, block your emotions, repress your emotions, deny your emotions, okay? And, of course, then these the kids who grow up to be teenagers and then adults who do exactly that.
Mm.
They're suspicious of emotions.
Mm.
And if you don't, there's actually a technical term for it. I can't remember what it is right now, but it's the inability to read emotional tone in others.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people have it. So if you have cut off your emotions, you can't read emotional language in others.
Hmm.
We get a lot of these people in the corporate world.
Mm.
You end up working with them. They're so closed off from their own emotions that they have no way of reading your emotional signals.
Mm.
And this is chaos, you know. And so we're living in a world right now, you see, where even those cues and affectations that are normal human, you know, body language and emotional tone and subtext, nobody's going to be able to accept it anymore.
Mm.
You know, you can work in certain places where there's no concept of subtext. Mm. They have no idea, unless you have almost a legalistic explanation of everything, they don't understand what you're talking about.
Mm.
You know, I mean, try that on the Cockneys or anybody, they'd be lost, you know. Everything's all innuendo and, you know, subtlety.
Yeah.
Well, these are beautiful subtleties of language that many, you know, people have. Certain subcultures like the Cockneys and others. There's many others.
Sure.
This is getting lost in the world today, in which you almost have to be a machine, you know, to speak in such logical, politically correct terms, you know.
Well, exactly.
To be even understood.
Double plus good. Yeah. I mean, we could tie this back to Orwell and all of this. Again, it's about, you know, even removing the language in order to be able to express yourself or your emotions, you know.
That's right. Exactly. And of course, if you... Well, you know, what's happening now is that people distrust their emotions, they inhibit themselves, and then they lose the ability to communicate on an emotional level to other people. And what this means is then that the needs of the other person or their genuine emotional signals are not being registered anymore. And this is what you're getting right across the counter. You go into banks, you go into stores, you try to get served somewhere, you know, and this is what you're bumping into. Waiters, you know, who just, they're completely sterile. They cannot read your language anymore. And if you are an expressive, a creative person who hasn't got all these blockages, you're going to be living in a very, very, you know, inhibited place that you're not going to like too much. But one of the other factors we have to really understand is this whole action of Pluto. You know, and they, I get a lot of emails of people wanting to, you know, see how this is happening. They're feeling the effects of Pluto, you know, where I've said that it will be felt, which is right in the domestic life first, right in the relationships world first. But again, on a broader level, you know, Pluto is, I believe, is connected to the Holy Spirit. So, you know, I'm not negative about all of this because I do see that there's also a tremendous component here of positivity, like we've said on other shows. What Pluto does is it does divide, though. I mean, you're seeing what you're seeing right now, and not in 2012, but right now, is a dividing between the sane and the unsane. Now, Pluto, as you know, said in other work, is connected to Shiva. You know, the god Shiva, but Shiva was connected to mountains, you know, especially the Himalayas. And the mountain is a very important metaphor. I use it a lot. I think we've used it before because I was talking about how the sane man, the strong man, who's ascending the mountain of life, even though he has to climb over broken rocks, even though his, you know, lungs hurt, even though it's a tremendously lonely process and cold and hard, if he continue and the climb, and the climb, of course, as you climb, gets steeper, right, and the weights get heavier, you know, I mean, people will understand the meaning of the metaphor here. But the beautiful exaltation of that is that now you start to see a bigger and bigger panoply of the world. So this is the plus.
That's
anyone
right.
who's climbed a physical mountain knows this, and it's bloody the same thing when you're doing the spiritual homework, is when you climb higher and higher, it may be harder and harder. There may be less tourists on the way to keep you company, but there's nothing to compare to that vista that you get to see reality as it really is. Now, we know that those are the few sane men who have nothing to worry about with what we're talking about here today. They ain't going to be experiencing no technotopia because they're true. They're dealing with their emotions, they're dealing with what is real, and they're continuing their spiritual work. They do not come under the heading of what we're talking about today. What I'm talking about is the future that lurks for the person who turns back and heads right back down to ground zero, to base camp, and goes, oh, that's too tough, can't handle that. Let me go back to the village. Patrick McGoohan,
Oh, yeah,
if you want to use the word village with a capital V. I am back, you know, where's the bars? Where's my number, you know, because I don't like, I want the limited vision of the village, and I want the villagers to keep me company. Well, that's the kind of person who's going, who has now, you know, escaped from himself. And escape from reality. He's not interested in reality, so don't try to force it down his throat. He's not interested in changing the world, feeding the poor, you know, the hungry, or anything. He's interested in escape and forgetfulness. He wants TV and Oprah Winfrey and you know, there's two weeks of holiday and the job and the corporate awards. See, he feels comfortable in that world. It's he who I'm worried about, because by abnegating selfhood and by abnegating the truth, he is then allowing his rulers to conveyor belt him in exactly the direction they want. Because he's sitting in their bus. He is not rebelling. He is not living authentically. So now he has become a pawn that they can do anything they want with. You see?
And he wants that.
And he wants it. He has literally signed on as their child.
So it's this step here that kind of takes us or you know, those who don't choose then to climb the mountain, as it were, to go towards this direction of the, as you call it, the technotopia, meaning that, you know, we're going to have the the cyborg now. We're going to have all the, you know, genetic human genome combinations, the chimeras and the splicing, and potentially that this might lead us into some, you know, some new areas, basically.
Well, Werner Vinge, he was a San Diego University professor of computer science. In 1993, he said, quote, it's very similar to the one that you started the program with from Steve Quayle. Vinge says that we are on the edge of change comparable to the rise of human life on Earth. Within 30 years, we will have the technological means to create superhuman intelligence. Shortly after that, the human era will end.
Mm.
That's exactly what my thrust of 2012 is about. It's not about ascending to some higher spiritual plane, you know, and all of this other junk that you hear. It's about facing facts and realizing that, look, we are heading, we've always, this is not just something in the last 10 years or 13 years.
Mm.
This has been a movement from the time of Francis Bacon and probably before that. We've got very sick, insane human, insane alien people, alien forces ruling this world.
Mm.
And they've been steering us, you know, into whichever direction they feel we need to go.
Mm.
It's just that we have now more perks. You can travel to this hell first class. You know, that's all the difference.
Mm.
They can take you to purgatory. They can take you right down into, you know, the abyss of destruction. But believe me, you're going to go first class. We got television. We got video games. We got, you know, we can turn you on. You'll have a headset. You know, you'll enjoy the ride.
Yeah.
You know how many, I mean, it's that restaurant at the end of the universe, Douglas Adams' Perfect Nightmare, where you pay $1 million to watch the Big Bang at the end of the world. You know, didn't somebody say, it was a brilliant quote that, I think I have it somewhere. It was, it was from Jerry Mander, the guy who wrote The Four Arguments for the Elimination of Television. He's a great writer. He said, mankind's self-alienation has reached such a degree that it can experience its own destruction as an aesthetic pleasure of the first order.
Huh.
When I look around, that's what I see.
Yeah.
That, you know, people have become so jaded now, the drugs aren't doing it. So we're in this Jim Morrison sort of, you know, the end, the song The End, all the children are insane, you know.
Mm.
We're in a situation, and he predicted, he already saw it coming, that man has become so desensitized now that his own destruction, either through drugs or through some other bizarre means, that's his new high.
Mm.
He's itching for it. He wants to buy a ticket. Because why? He's given up being human.
Mm.
But nobody can stop you being human. I mean, they will try. We're not saying that there's not an overt action. There is.
Mm.
But that has no power unless in some way you want it to happen.
Mm.
Nobody can take your soul. You have to give it away.
Mm.
And so this is what I think is happening.
Wow. So that's, again, that's the strive for the destruction, or even Armageddon in that way, that man is going to, well, even we can compare this to, you know, the movies that are out there. We can, I mean, one that come to mind right away, of course, is the Matrix, of course, obviously. And again, man becoming, you know, part of the machine, the symbiotic relationship, but then in a way also moving away from that and actually ending up in a clash with the machines. Again, we have the almost end of the world type wars that is going on between man and machine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's so many parallels there.
Exactly, because there's always a love-hate relationship. What we're dealing with here is the mechanicalness that man projects a reality, a mechanistic reality, and then becomes the slave of his own creation.
Mm, yeah.
Again, this is the downside of going down the wrong way in society.
Mm-hmm.
I already see man being mechanized within his own being. To me, a world full of machines is neither here nor there. Man himself is becoming mechanical.
Mm-hmm.
See, I'm coming from the school of Wilhelm Reich, who talked about body armoring, you see, and the whole tension of the body.
Mm.
And I've talked before about even the certain so-called health exercises that people do, you know, their general body language, the foods that they eat. You know, the mechanization, the clothes that they wear, the suit and tie, you know, there's a lot of areas that go into this, the phallic skyscrapers. You know, it's a whole subject in itself of this armoring, which is another way of tensing the body, you know, if you want to get into the bioenergetics of it, because, again, you don't want to feel pain.
Oh,
what happens if I jab
yeah.
you right now with a needle? Don't you tighten up?
Sure, yeah.
Well, I would if somebody did it to me, you know. And somebody gives you a whack, you know, you're playing soccer and, you know, you get whacked.
Mm.
Ugh, your whole body tightens up.
Mm.
Well, most people are living in that kind of tightness all day long, even without being hit.
Yeah.
Because the fact of the matter is that subliminally they are being hit. They're being hit by all kinds of stresses that you see and so on.
Mm.
But you are in control of your own stress.
Mm.
It's attitude that stops stress.
That's
not
right.
Getting massages or going, oh my goodness. No, those are nice and pleasant if you can have it. But ultimately, you de-stress yourself by your thinking about life. Think that you're a person who thinks that there are certain there are problems in life. If you have a person who believes that there's such a thing as a problem, then you're in stress. You know, or how you deal with life or how you deal with upsets. So it's all a conscious thing.
Yeah, and even the idea of that you might be putting it off. I just have to finish this one and then can I can relax, or I got to do that before I can, you know. But you don't deal with it in the moment and feel like, okay, whatever, you know, pressure I have on me right now, the most important thing for me is to just relax, you know, and deal with that stress. And you know,
the most important thing is to notice that you have the stress and to not be self-sadistic about yourself having the stress. See, what happens is people notice that they're stressed and then get really self-sadistic on top of that, going, I shouldn't be stressed. You know, or they again, recriminate with themselves. If you're feeling the stress, it's perfectly natural. Feel it and then end it. Just go, oh my goodness, look, I feel stressed right now. I'm not in my center. Hang on a minute. Let me look at this from another perspective. You go real easy on yourself because life is not easy on you and neither are other people. The biggest problem that you have in life is other people around you giving you, you know, all the wrong messages and the wrong and just not really hearing you and all of the rest of it. So our human relationships are very complex and mostly of a negative variety. So it's up to you then, see, to change your attitude so that people don't have this power to violate your sovereignty. Right, exactly. But see, again, it's very important for people to realize that it's a sugar coating. You're taken to this, you know, technotronic hell, but as I said, you know, there's a tendency that they're going to sort of sell you a first class ticket. Oh, great, we're going to live forever, we're going to stop aging. Oh my goodness, you know, it's going to be so, you know, what's the new machine, you know, on the block? What's the new gadget? You know, what's the, how are we going to, you know, cure cancer or some other stuff that they, you know, will sell you? You know, and it's exactly, didn't somebody, it was a Voltaire said that the ancient Romans built their great masterpieces of architecture, for wild beasts to fight in.
That's right.
So you can have the perfect, you know, trappings. You can have the most labor-saving devices. You can have, you know, this beautiful California, you know, Californication world in which everything's laid at the fingertips and the smile is on your face from morning to night. This sterile, you know, psychopathic effervescence that everything's just so positive and wonderful, you know, because you've been anesthetized. You've literally, it's like I've said it many times before, it's not that you're facing reality, you've edited reality. You're living in an idea of reality. And then that's why you can have this one season, you see, world that you're living in. But so you can have all the trappings, but if there's no soul, if there's no real feeling back of it, then you have nothing. And then it will crumble, or then it can be overtaken by, you know, those people who want to lead that anti-civilization wherever they want to leave it. So when I'm talking about 2012, it's not about some prediction, some mystical, oh, I can see the future. It's got nothing to do with prediction at all. It's got to do with diagnosing how was a thing started, how was it built. If you put a house that's on the sand, you don't need to predict that one day it's going to fall. It's a, you know, it's not really a prediction, is it?
Yeah, that's right.
If you put your food that's for 2 minutes in the microwave, but you keep it in for half an hour, you know it's inedible. There's no predicting necessary. It's just a simple fact of looking at how a thing is built. Well, if you see a civilization that was founded wrongly, incorrectly, if it's been misguided from day one, it's certainly not going to end up in a utopia, no matter how you, you know, how you philosophize about it. It's just simply not going to happen. So what will it end up in? You may not know utopia, but you may know a technotopia. You may know an artificial world that's being created, and we know that that is exactly what is happening.
That's right. And even, again, looking at 2012, with all the talk of the singularity, you know, artificial life within 3 to 10 years, there, again, there's so many, many examples, the, you know, turning into cyborgs or whatever. So this is kind of, in a way, on the timeline, in a way, that this is potentially what could be coming within, you know, these years leading up to 2012, and especially if we talk about the singularity, with which in itself, of course, is that it might, you know, the idea is that the rate of progress will develop so much so that we will, in the end, not be able to, you know, predict where we might be heading. I mean, so that is end of history right there, or end of time in a way, almost, you know.
Yes, that's right. Those people who end up knowing so much about so little. You know, we can't even gain, we can't even store the information.
Mm.
And we end up knowing lots and lots about less and less and less until, you know, that's it.
Yeah.
We know a lot about nothing.
That's right. That's
so,
right,
you know, yeah. Science has its own problems, yes. But you see, that's again because it started off on the wrong foot.
Mm.
There's not a scientist in this world who has a healthy mind.
Did it start off on the wrong foot?
Of course
with
it
the
did.
Sciences?
Materialistic, mm. positivism, mm. the idea that there is no greater spirit, there's no implicate order.
Mm.
Well, let me put it this way. Find me a scientist who does not think that everything that he's studying is a problem. Right there, that's
that
is a problem.
I see what you mean, yeah, sure.
Aging is a problem, therefore give us billions of dollars to fix it genetically.
I guess I look at it on the more like the alchemical way, like the spiritual science that feels that
well,
this
we're
was
not,
a component
yeah, but
from the start, you know.
We're
but,
not talking anything about that.
I mean,
because remember, that involves personal spiritual development.
That's right, yeah.
A true alchemist is not some guy in a white coat who just walks into a lab, you know, to torture animals. You know, with a $1 billion budget.
Yeah.
This is an individual who works deeply on their own being. They know what the real science is. No, the characters we've got today are, you know, again, very, very toxic, insane people who look at life, climate, oh my God, it's a problem. Look what's happening. Oh, aging, that's a problem. Oh, sickness and disease, that's a problem. Everything's a problem. Well, if you look at something as a problem and then want billions of dollars to fix it, you're never going to fix it.
Mm.
You're already in a totally ludicrous situation.
Mm.
This is what has led us down one cul-de-sac after another of people who don't know that man is already a perfect being.
Mm.
There is no problems except that they manufacture it.
Mm.
And by seducing you into the idea that, yeah, life's a bitch, man, there's so many problems we need to fix, you know, these then people, just like politicians, as deadly as politicians, can lead you down the garden path.
Mm.
These are people who believe in hierarchy, not holarchy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they look at everything as a problem that needs to be fixed, as if this mechanical... You know, nature is a problem that needs to be fixed. Your life, your aging. You see, so they've basically succeeded in doing is dividing you from your body.
Mm-hmm.
They make your body, your DNA, seem a very mechanical thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they've slowly through their drip feeding of these fancy terms and these talismanic words, even the way they depict DNA physically as this sort of Lego set and all of this,
mm-hmm.
even in their graphics and certainly in their subtle words. They're changing your relationship to your body.
Mm.
They're colonizing your mind. They're giving you a very demonic, I believe, understanding of your body.
Mm.
As it's like almost like a car engine in which you go, well, this is the part that doesn't work. Let's extract it.
Mm, yeah.
You know, or let's get in there with a spanner and twist your DNA, you know, and fix this and add this and take that away.
Mm.
And you'll be okay. We'll fix all your problems.
Mm.
Not once do they ever mention the word conscience, you know, the consciousness is what DNA is.
Mm.
DNA is a vibration. It's a crystalline expression or in a mathematical expression of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Well, these guys are at war with your consciousness, so they're never going to bring up the question of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
They're at war and they're using words, and they're using science, and they're using their pseudoscience and their terms to get under your skin, to change your relationship with your own being,
sure.
so that you're more likely to be in an inner state of total Armageddon, so that they can walk in and go, well, we'll fix you.
Mm.
We've got the cure. And do you know how many millions of people are now falling for this?
Mm. And exactly, we can tie this back to, let's say, Bruce Lipton, who talks about the idea that, you know, again, consciousness has an effect on DNA, meaning that they actually can change your DNA with words, with symbols, with, you know...
With light?
With light, sure, yeah.
Well, let's not even get into the whole photonic thing and, you know, connecting to my work on atomism and the whole culture of the super-lit world we're living in.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Isn't it not true that half of these companies that are dealing in this Frankensteinian thing have names like Illumina and Solex and Sol this and Sol that and throwing light at you and their names, Illumina?
Yeah.
Okay, what, you know...
Genomics firm right there. Yeah, exactly. There's so much of these
right.
companies around.
Just look at the symbolism.
That's right.
We were talking earlier, didn't you say that one of them... Because I actually believe a lot of this genetic stuff is under the jurisdiction of the Knights Templar. This is provable, that the first genetic experiments and cloning experiments were done on Templar land, Sinclair land up at Rosslyn, et cetera, et cetera. And didn't you show me one time that there was this is scientific, top-level, highbrow genetics company, their symbol was the chalice of the Grail?
That's right. That's the Methuselah Foundation and a guy called Dr. Aubrey de Grey. Interesting name there, of course, but... is behind this Methuselah Foundation. And, of course, Methuselah goes back to the Bible again, a character, patriarch in there, who actually lived to be like 969 years or something like that. And what Aubrey de Grey is looking at is to what he calls curing the disease of aging, you know, to look into all of this, to actually stop that. And interestingly enough, they're working with, together with another firm, to develop AI. This is a long process in a way, because they're going to develop AI. Then the AI is going to develop, you know, a potential then a cure for you know, the going into our cells, into the biology of humans, and in order so we can change and so forth. But they work together with a company called the Sinclair Limited, I think.
Unbelievable.
So this actually does tie back to the fact that this is about, in a way, the Holy Grail. Even actually, if you look at the Methuselah Foundation icon that they have on their website, it is a Holy Grail that they have there.
It doesn't surprise me in the least, because I'm thoroughly convinced that Crookes and Watson and all of this stuff, it was under the jurisdiction of the Knights Templar. Mm-hmm. These discoveries were even done in buildings that were on Templar land.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Knights St. John Hospitallers.
Hospitallers,
yeah.
You'll
notice that these
mm-hmm.
guys ran the hospitals. You know, it's a long show to get into that, but we can put up links, I guess, on this interview's website.
Definitely.
For people who are interested in this idea, because even the positioning of some of these buildings in which these researches were done, these characters like de Grey, find out who the de Grey family are. In fact, let's even look into the word Grey itself and how, you know, many permutations there is with this word.
Definitely.
It turns up in so many contexts, specifically within this. And again, what we're talking about here is a symbolic literacy in which you've got to follow the trail through this means of looking at the names that these people use. A lot of these names are titles.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them are subliminal keys that if you follow, like the word Grey is monumentally interesting.
It is. You definitely. Know? There's so much there. And then we can even tie in, I guess, the guy who was behind developing the Human Genome Project, Craig Venter, a.k.a. Darth Venter, who kind of semi, I guess, hijacked the Human Genome Project when that was privatized after this was overseen by Department of Energy, oversaw this project. So this was sold out, privatized, and then of course Craig Venter goes in there and leading a lot of this development now on the genomics and human DNA parts of the scientific work. But there is an interesting image even of him standing, like a photo shoot, standing with the white doctor outfit on the half of his body, and then he has the black business suit on the other half of his body. Basically making him a man of black and white, or the man who moves between the black and white, the gray man, basically.
Isn't that interesting? And the black and white, you see, for people who don't know, is a very powerful Masonic symbol. They have the black and white checkerboard. And it's also the original symbol of the Knights Templar.
That's
their
right.
flag or insignia was a black, simply black and white. And you'll see this in the Prisoner series of Patrick McGoohan, how they make a lot of use of this black and the white.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, this character in his ad copy is literally standing there. And I believe he had his arms crossed or something, wasn't it?
That's right.
Take on, you know, again, that has a lot of different permutations. But just the fact that the man is shown in black and white is literally saying, here's who I work for.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have half a symbolic literacy, you can check out the whole thing, you know, from that point of view. And I guess people need to follow that through.
And let's not forget, because again I mentioned Methuselah, again going back to you know, Old Testament stuff. This is something that goes back, you know, all the time. If you research this, we talked about the words and all this. Craig Venter is actually behind also a contest. The XPRIZE Foundation is offering $10 million to the first team that can sequence the DNA of 100 people within 10 days. And what is so interesting here is that the contest actually is called the Archon Genomics XPRIZE.
The Archon.
Archon.
Well, Archon is a Latin word that it refers to fallen angels.
How about that?
Yeah, not in its literal. It is used by the Gnostics. Mm-hmm. A fallen angel or a higher spirit is called an Archon.
Mm.
See, why are these guys who are meant to be the top scientists working in these very technical fields, why do they keep dipping into Bible, Old Testament? We look at the symbolism, and this is what we're really being told. I hope people really get this, because there's a reason why they keep dipping into Gnosticism for their terminologies and their words. You know, the word of the thousands of words that you could use, you just happen to be called Illumina. Of the thousands of words that you could use for your company, you just happen to be called Archon.
Mm.
But the average punter doesn't know where these terms come from.
That's right.
Or they're going to just look up in an ordinary dictionary where they come from. But you need to do the research and find out. We have got some pretty sinister characters here who are very, you know, skilled and highly financed to be able to dupe you, again, selling you a first-class ticket to the, you know, utopian, the dystopia that they want you to go to.
Mm.
And again, they may sell you the first-class ticket saying, this is all for your own good.
Mm.
We'll take away your pain. So one of the things that the world is designed to do, you see, is to throw at you a lot of things that cause you pain.
Mm.
The stress of work, you see, the corporatization. They know that all this TV violence, the news, we've said this many times before, is part of this culture to create disassociation within you.
Exactly.
So that you end up feeling, you know, very alienated and stressed.
And you're going to end up demanding that, something That's is right. going to be done about this.
Mm-hmm. And they have it ready and waiting. They've got their scientists. You know, these things are highly funded. We have to realize that, you know, IBM, Microsoft, MIT, CIT, the SRI, you know, the group called Neotech, Frank R. Wallace.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, we've got DuPont. We've got the World Health Organization breaking their backs over this stuff.
Mm.
In America, I was studying the VA hospitals there and the Chicago, you know, Institute and the University of Chicago. But Glaxo, Welcome.
Mm.
You know, we've got corporations here, billion-dollar corporations who are heavily working towards this. We have people like Dr. Jose Delgado.
Mm, yeah.
The people need to study, you know, who are absolutely demonic. I've got a quote from him here, actually, which is incredible. Delgado says, "This new knowledge is so important that I think it should radically change the philosophy of our education system, which believes in the sanctity of individuals."
Mm.
So he's saying, the hell with it. Remember saying?
Mm.
The hell with the sanctity of individuals. That's all for the plebs. That's all for the, you know, the kindergarten level.
Yeah, yeah.
He says, thinking that an individual exists at birth.
Mm.
This is not true, he says. And this science is going to prove the fallacy of democracy in the sense that we talk about the rights of the individual.
Mm.
This democratic belief is not true. Because we are forming this individual, so he says, we are forming this individual.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to know who the we he's talking about is. They often use this term, we.
Mm.
Because we are forming this individual, because we are constructing his brain, right? There's the brain. Mm-hmm. You see, your brain is a mechanical. Even I've said it in my work that the mind is programmed by collective centuries of programming, but the brain is programmed in your personal life by this world.
Mm.
And these people believe that your brain is absolutely a machine. So I don't care if they fill the world with machines. They're already making you into a machine.
Mm, yeah.
Because we are constructing his brain, we are willy-nilly making the differences we either like or dislike. This is what he's saying.
Mm.
Then we have another creature from a guy called Curtis Schaefer. He's an engineer for Norton Kite Corporation.
Mm-hmm, mm.
He says the ultimate achievement of biocontrol may be the control of man himself. The controlled subject would never be permitted to think as individuals. A few months after, a surgeon would equip each child with a socket mounted under the scalp and electrodes reaching selected areas of brain tissue. The child's sensory perceptions and muscular activity would be modified or completely controlled by bioelectric signals radiating from state-controlled transmitters.
Mm.
Now, this is this Frankensteinian Orwellian maniac who's itching for the day when we're lining up saying, please do it to me.
Mm.
They're not going to come to your house and force you.
Mm.
They're waiting till you line up.
That's right. That's right.
What would happen, for instance, instead of sending kids to school, because as you know, teachers have no power really to discipline kids anymore. They're utterly, in fact, the teachers are at the mercy of the kids.
Mm, yeah.
Well, okay. All we got to have is one of these creatures from one of these corporations come along and go, look, when a child is born, we, you know, put inside their brain tiny, tiny little, microchips or whatever that are put in the limbic area or whatever, so that whenever even a antisocial thought arises, or even when the pain or stress levels arise in a person, there's a minute electric shock.
Mm-hmm,
it's not felt consciously, but it's, you know, felt. It's a very, very minute shock in the brain.
Mm.
So that every time a countercultural thought is created, you see, or a problem or any kind of violence or rage or anger or true emotion gets erased, the brain from childhood, from birth, is receiving a minute electric shock.
Okay.
Right? We're coming to the age in which this can actually be manifested right now.
Mm-hmm.
So that the baby grows up to be completely nonviolent, utterly passive, utterly docile. Because it's receiving, you know, again, below the threshold of consciousness, but, you know, enough to realize that never have those thoughts, never have those thoughts. So we're going to be in a they-live situation in which you're walking around and it's, you know, control, obey.
But everything's going to be so wonderful.
And everything's wonderful, yeah. You know, and we are living in a world now in which you can't even walk in the supermarket, or you can't even go to the airport without 1,001 rules being thrown at you in this wonderfully soft, you know, voice telling you to, you know, walk on the handrails, don't think, don't smoke, watch your luggage, you know, and we're getting used to it.
That's right, being told from everywhere, exactly. And, I just want to read another thing here that relates to the Stanford Research Institute again here. This was actually from a report called A Computer-Based Exploration of Alternative Futures for Mankind 2000. And this quote here is incredible. In the organization of a civilization of the future, we anticipate that the individualistically oriented man will become an anachronism. Yeah. Indeed, he will be viewed as a threat to the group organization as well as to his fellow man. Hence, as stated, he in all likelihood will have few individual expectations. While such a picture may not be pleasant to contemplate, when viewed with our present orientation and value judgment, we would be amiss to deal with unrealistic imageries that would blind us to future reality. That's incredible.
And from that, you can decode that, and you can see that the subtext is there that it's a war against consciousness.
Yeah.
See, they already own you in every other way. The only last thing that's free about a human being that makes him really unique is his consciousness. And that's what they want to now crush completely. The war on consciousness is a very serious thing. It's to be taken absolutely seriously. They own you in every other way. You know, they make your cars, they make your toothbrushes, they make the airplanes you fly in, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, so basically they have, you know, human race chained in every other sense. But they know that the human being is free in his mind. And what we're seeing now is the colonization, the conquest of the mind. This is what is dangerous.
The new battlefield, as it were.
That's right. And ultimately, it may mean that they're doing it out of a form of benevolence, sick benevolence, of course, but of course, fatherly benevolence. If they're making us in their image, if they've already considered us to be born in their image, but it takes time, evolution, in order to get rid of a lot of these problematic human traits, well, then just give it a few centuries. You know, let's see how things go. You know, we'll have a renaissance and an industrial age and an agricultural age, and we'll move them forward to the Silicon Age, and then it'll be this age, and now we're in, you know, here we are.
Raising the age of amnesia. On the highway also is going faster and faster all the time, you know, quicker and quicker. Yeah.
Why not? Because we're being pushed. Things go faster when there's an artificial hand pushing you, but from behind it you don't see. Of course things are going fast because they can't wait. And I believe that this can co-op. You can start believing the advertising. They can throw it at you so many times throughout your life that in the end you can end up buying right into it. If life becomes so painful emotionally, that you live in a shrink-wrapped world where you have literally cut off your own sense, your truth. And I'm not talking about some stupid sensationalism. Sensation and emotion is two totally different things. But they can look so similar that you can think that one is the other. But if you've really cut off genuine emotions because you don't want to feel pain, you've also cut off your legitimate feeling centers. And this is where what is happening all across the world right now.
Yeah, so I mean, again, the question here then is maybe not the or the point rather than the question that this might not be, you know, in that sense, to sit here and fear the machine, as it were, because we're already it, basically, or we're approaching that level, I should say, and a lot of people are. And what I have to bear in mind is that this is a choice, basically, that we have. This is something we have to deal with. Otherwise, we could end up in this situation where we're becoming a part of the, of the beehive of the new, you know, cyborg man machine type, you know, society. Basically.
Oh yeah. If this is what people want, then fine, go ahead and attain it. You know, civilizations have crumbled before. My goodness, they talk about Atlantis falling. They're talking, you know, there's mythologies telling you that the highest civilization is known on man. This is stuff we haven't even attained as yet, already crumbled because, you know, they had weak foundations or whatever. So absolutely it can happen. You know, and also the prevention of all of that can happen very quickly because it's a choice. You know, the great American philosopher Vernon Howard said it in one sentence. He said that human sickness is so severe that few can bear to look at it, but those who do will become well.
Interesting.
But you must not edit. You must not live in a one-season world. You must not allow yourself to be dichotomized or colonialized, meaning don't divide yourself between your emotions and your, you know, so-called rational centers.
This is a good point, an interesting one also, because, you know, if we look upon this Like they say that you actually sit down, turn on the TV and think that you're going to get, you know, being able to look at the real world or whatever, you turn on, you know, whatever new channel you pick. And, you know, what we're being fed there is also a very, you know, a highly negative image in that way, in order to push us towards this, you know, limit that we're talking about, that people are going to be so depressed by the news, all the bad news that is out there. So, I mean, again, this is potentially then not about, okay, I'm not going to, you know, turn away from it all, but I also might not want to, you know, sit down and, you know, chew through all the news channels in order to deal with the dark side of what is going on, you know?
Right. You have to know enough about what's going on outside in order to see the trend as to what to resist, you know, what to rebel against. You have to know that this is false. You have to use your reason. And if you're a rational person, you will observe what kind of cocktail of lies, you see, and so on, that is being sent to you through these oracles. And you must learn how to become immune to them. You know, take them in small doses, see what's going on, and realize what's happening. And not lose your center. And again, like Jung said, you know, all the psychologists of merit are telling you, don't fear to look at your so-called dark side. It's not a dark side at all. It's another aspect of you. You've been trained to think as a dark side. Now, granted, as we've said in previous programs, some primal wound, very legitimate, may have prevented you, you see, from dealing with it because you've suffered legitimate pain. And the natural reaction is to block that. So you don't feel it anymore. Granted. But when you realize the consequences of you doing that permanently, that is pathological, and once you realize that a schizophrenic mind is what creates a schizogenic society, that a toxic mind creates a toxic society, pathogenic mind creates a pathogenic society, pathological mind creating a pathogenic society, then you know that you cannot afford to do that. You take responsibility, and you start to go through a different kind of process, in which you reevaluate your pain and your suffering and the stuff that's happening to you, and you don't give birth, you see, to this Frankensteinian world because you just want to be an escapism. But I know that, you know, my words are not being heard by the, you know, 90% of the world. That's just a plain fact. They haven't listened to teachers far, far greater and more eloquent than I am. So I believe then that we need to get around that. We need to understand, as painful as it is, and I think that this Plutonic action is trying to demand that of us, is to not be concerned then that most of the world is not going to get it. It's not our responsibility anyway. It's not. We have a dedication to truth and justice, not the human beings. This is a mistake. Because we don't know who these people are and what the karma they are here for on this planet. And if they make these choices, that's their perfect right to make these choices. You don't have the right to join political parties to try and change things like this. All you have the right to do is change yourself. You know, and then you may want to guide others, but you cannot walk the road for them.
That's right, yeah.
Now, see, I am a believer that nobody's enforcing any type of technotronic world on us. We are asking for it. Everything that happens in this world is the human race, in some way, on some subliminal level, demanding it. And I don't care if that's death and fauna, you know, or the earth changes or the climate changes. And how, like we said on previous shows, how incredibly brilliantly they're trying to now insist that climate change is what you need to be focused on. Not a word about consciousness, not a word about psychology, not a word about the Reichian theory that even the weather is controlled by human consciousness. That's where I want to go. That's what I want to hear. I want to hear Bruce Lipton. I want to hear the Jung, you know, the Jungians and the Reichians talking, because they educate us. They show you that you are, like the Native American Indian shaman shows you, you are part of a web of life. Your very thoughts change the positive and negative ionization of the world, let alone your own DNA and your own body. But now Big Brother in his white coat, or these Mr. Grays, these gray men, are going, no. We have a stamp on your DNA. If you look very close, you'll see our welcome stamp. Glaxo own you. DuPont, don't you see that? We're gonna get in the way of you and your DNA. They're not interested in your damn DNA. They got the $1 billion to do whatever they want. They're interested in your consciousness. This is just the backdoor route, you see, in which they're going to, again, have you. It's a ritual. It's an incredible Templar ritual in which you put your own DNA, basically your own consciousness, on their ashlar, on their altar. This is the way it was in day one. These guys are old geneticists from thousands of years back. Can people handle that? They may be on their way to be digging up their own masters in the Iraqi desert soon. We're into some pretty heavy sorcery, into some pretty heavy necromancy here. And they don't mind putting you on the altar of sacrifice to do that.
Sheesh.
They've had caduceuses and serpents and staffs, symbols going back for thousands of years. You think this is new?
Mm.
Again, I emphasize the study of the symbolism and the words that these companies use will tell you all there is needs to know.
That's right, that's right. It's incredible. And, you know, Michael, I think that that is a great place to begin to round things up for this time. And, you know, again, I want to thank you so much for coming on. It's always a pleasure and, you know, absolutely fascinating to have you on. So thank you, Michael. It's always great. And before we round things up, of course, I want to leave the last few minutes. You can mention, tell us about your website and, of course, your books and your excellent DVD series.
Well, the information, again, in what we've been talking about today is more thoroughly explored in two areas. One is the DVD 2012, Where History Ends, and the other one is the free web stream 2012, The Future of Mankind.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, today we've been recapping a lot, but I get so many requests, you see, to explain more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've had about 500,000 or 550,000 people watching the...
Jeez, yeah.
You know, this thing, I walked into that studio, I didn't even have a faintest idea in Los Angeles that was going to be filmed, and we've got over 500,000 people. Mm. It's actually in excess of 500,000 people. Can you imagine filling our front room with 500,000 people?
That's right. It's amazing.
You know, you couldn't fill us, you know, where could you in the city hire a room or a hotel, you know, which is where we do talks mostly, is hotel ballrooms and what have you. And I just think to myself, my goodness, through the power of the internet, you know, we've had over 500,000 people watch this thing. But I got a lot of requests to go into greater detail.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks for offering me the opportunity to do that.
Mm.
I hope that you'll put up, you know, we'll put up the rest of the links pertaining to what we've been talking about, because you see, this is an old theory that has a lot of history, philosophically speaking.
Mm.
People need to really know it in order to spot it as it starts to come down on us in the next 7 years.
Mm. Yeah. And you know, the voyage, as it were, continues on the, you know, in order to, we're going to keep tracking this, keeping an eye on this and, you know, trying to get as many people, you know, awakened in time, you know, before.
Well, again, you know, the sane man looks at this in a very positive way and realizes that he is having a difficult climb up the mountain of reality, but there's no way to downplay, you see, or minimize this incredible vision that he has of the world, of reality. And he should not feel responsible for those who, you know, haven't got that kind of strength, who go back down to be, you know, manacled.
That's right.
By the world order.
Hopefully it's their choice.
Yeah, ultimately it is their choice.
Mm. Okay, everybody, so the website you need to take a look at is, of course, michaeltessarion.com. Also check out terrascopes.com and, of course, originsandoracles.com, and check out those DVDs. There's, you know, tons and hours of information on those DVDs, and that's absolutely fascinating and brilliant stuff you need to check out. So, again, Michael, thank you so much for coming on. It's a pleasure.
Thanks.
We want to encourage you to subscribe to Red Eyes Creations and take advantage of our growing radio archive of subscriber interviews. We're also working on a brand spanking new member section with a lot of good stuff coming up for our subscribers. So click on subscribe from our front page, redicecreations.com, and come aboard. Don't miss out on our wonderful recent subscriber interviews with Wayne Herschel, Andy Lloyd, David Hatcher, Childress, Scott Volter, Lloyd Pye, and Michael Cremo, just to name a few. Thank you for tuning in. Hope you've enjoyed and learned much from our program today. I want to say thanks to Fredrik Palmgren behind the controls also. Red Eyes Creations Radio will be back on Sunday. This is Henrik Palmgren. Until then, take good care.
This is the end, beautiful friend. This is the end, my only friend, the end of our elaborate plans, the end of everything that stands, the end. No safety or surprise, the end. I'll never look into your eyes again. desperately in need of some stranger's hand. In a desperate land, lost in a romance, wilderness of pain, and all the children are insane. All the children are inside the gold mine. Ride the highway west, baby. Ride the snake. Ride the snake to the lake. The ancient lady, the snake is long, 7 miles. Ride the snake, he's old and his skin is cold. The West is the best. The West is the best. Get here and we'll do the rest. The blue bar is calling us. The blue bus is calling us. Driver, where you taking us? The killer awoke before dawn. He put his boots on. He took a face from the ancient gallery and he walked on down the hall. He went into the room where his sister lived, and then he paid a visit to his brother, and then he walked on down the hall, and he came to a door, and he looked inside. Father, yes, son, I want to kill you. Mother, I want to. Take a chance with us. Come on, baby, take a chance with us. Come on, baby, take a chance with us and meet me at the back of the blue bus. Do not blue rock on that blue bus. Do not.
This is